Hi everyone. Before we get started on the story, I wanted to remind you that my memoir, Both Sides of the Fire Line, is available at any of your favorite bookstores, whether it's in your neighborhood or it's Amazon. You can purchase it wherever you like. The book, Both Sides of the Fire Line, is published by Chicago Review Press, and I hope you enjoy the book. So let's get on with the story for today. Good morning, everyone. This is Bobby from Bobby on Fire, and it's October 14th, 2021, and Reva, our retired fire chief, is here, and John, our economist, is here, and me. So I have an interesting story, I think, as the stories that I often tell, and I've combined two stories for this week. And there's some important lesson here, and that is you shouldn't be alone when you're making tough decisions. You should be looking for advice and counsel. And when you have to make tough decisions, those decisions are going to weigh on you, and they're not easy. And I think it's very important to always be seeking advice and counsel and a mentor. And the people are there. You might not know they're there, but I suggest that if you're a leader, and it could be a squad boss on a hand crew, or it could be an engine captain, whatever that might be, if you're a battalion chief, I think it's important to have mentors. We never, ever know everything. And it's important to listen to someone else just to get another perspective. They might not have more years on the job than you do, but they have another perspective that would be important for you to hear. And so this story is about, or these stories are about, how you can access that that assistance. Now, the first story is back in the 80s, and I was on a fire department. And I was the chapter president of our local union. Now, I was the local president not because everybody thought I was a great leader for that position. More importantly, they were just happy as heck they didn't have to do it. And so because no one else wanted the job, I was the chapter president of our local. During that time, we had gotten a new chief, and the chief had come from a bigger city department, and I thought because he came from this bigger department, he knew a lot of stuff, and he did. He was a smart man, but, you know, intelligence comes in lots of different flavors. You know, we talk about the different kinds of intelligences, and there's academic, and there's entrepreneurial, and there's emotional, and there's all the different kinds of intelligence. I don't think this gentleman, the fire chief, had a lot of emotional intelligence. I don't think he understood how he was, the things he was saying, how it was affecting the firefighters that worked for him, or the community, the business community. And so there were things that happened over the year two or three that he was originally there, and things that happened, you know, kind of pissed off the firefighters. Now, let's be clear, firefighters are always going to be pissed off about something. That's kind of when you sign your employment papers, there's probably some line there that says, can you get mad about little things and make big, you know, big things out of nothing? If yes, okay, you can be a firefighter. And I say that tongue in cheek, folks. So, but you know, there's time to get yourself riled up. And if you've listened to some of these stories, you know, I've talked about them. You know, that one about sport bitching, one of the episodes, earlier episodes I titled Sport Bitching. It goes into that. We just kind of enjoy complaining about stuff. But this particular chief, you know, he was making changes and maybe doing changes without getting input, and against the advice of some of his staff, And so the leadership or the membership of the union and the fire department were not happy with him at all. He kind of rubbed people the wrong way. He could be a little arrogant. And when I say little arrogant, I think, you know, he had a giant ego, and that didn't go well with the folks, the way he spoke to them. Well, that's one thing to speak that way to your firefighters that work for you. It's another to maybe give the impression to your elected officials that you're working for as a fire chief. It's really even really bad if you start to speak that way to the business community in that jurisdiction that you're the fire chief for. You know, those business leaders have a lot of sway in the community. And it's very easy for the business community to start complaining to the elected officials about a fire chief if they perceive that he is imposing rules and regulations, and not just that, but how you enforce zoning ordinances and life safety ordinances. So that was, things got really bad, and the business community was starting to give the firefighters hell because they were blaming us for the chief's behavior. Well, it got to a point, I don't remember what the last straw was, but it got to a point at one of the union meetings, the membership, someone in the membership, I think they must have had it kind of planned out, made a motion that they wanted the union to take a vote of no confidence on the chief and present the results to the elected officials. Now, if that was going to happen, who was going to do it? Well, it was going to be me, because I was the unlucky sap who said I'd be the president. Well, we took a vote, and lo and behold, it passed. Everybody wanted to take a vote of confidence on the chief. So the rules were, in order to have a vote or a survey, a department-wide survey on the department, this was the policy, I had to tell the chief before I could send a survey out or a vote to our membership. That was in our agreement. And so I called the chief, and I can always remember this. I'm sitting at my little home desk, where I lived in my home, and I call the chief and say, Chief, this is Bobby. Yeah, what's going on? Well, I've got some news you're not going to be too happy about. Why? What's the matter? Well, the membership of the union last night voted to take a vote of confidence on you. His response, what? Followed by curse words and him hanging up on me. And I thought, oh God. You know, this is not good, but, you know, the membership voted, and so, okay, I got to do this, and because I'm the, you know, leader of the union, and so I submit all of the ballots out to the membership, and I get all of them back, and the entire membership voted no confidence in the chief except for one person. One person, the chief got one vote of confidence. Well, That was stressful as heck, because I was, you know, I'd only been on the job a few years, and the union was relatively new, our local was relatively new, and that was so difficult. Now, I thought, oh, wow, you know what, after I took the vote and everything is done and I've given the information to the elected officials, I call the state president, the president of all of the locals for the state, and said, hey, I wanted to let you know, the membership voted, they want to take a vote of confidence on the chief. And his answer was, oh my God, you didn't do it, did you? I said, well, yeah, I did, because they said they wanted me to do it. And he said, oh my God, you should have never done that. You should have called me. Called me immediately when something like that happens. And I was like, oh, Oh gosh, I didn't know. Yeah, that would have been smart, you know. And we probably would have continued with the vote, but he would have come to talk to the membership. He might have talked to some of the community. He would have been a great ally, and he would have mentored me and kept me from developing an ulcer, which I didn't really, but I felt like I was during that time. It was a stressful, stressful time. And the result was, in a few months, the chief saw the handwriting on the wall and took a position at another department, not as the fire chief, which was good. So that story ended well, but not without lots of bumps and without lots of stress and anxiety and worry. It could have gone bad, you know. It could have gone really bad, but it didn't, thankfully. And it wasn't because I was really good at my job. It was because I was a little bit lucky and things kind of fell into place. Now, years go by and I've changed agencies. I've gone back to school, gotten a master's, and I'm working for the feds. And I get a new job. I went from one agency to the next, to another one with the federal government, in the same position, a fire management officer or division chief. And I had an assistant who was I never got good vibes from him. I just felt like he didn't like me. And I thought, well, it could be just because he applied for the job and didn't get it. And then you can make up all sorts of reasons why someone might not be happy that you got the job, or not like you. You know, we read all sorts of things into situations, and sometimes our intuition is good, and sometimes we're off base. So I tried to keep an open mind. And I don't know, you know, I don't know what the reasons were, but I got that impression. But I kept having trouble with my engine crews. Things that I would say, hey, we need to make sure that we start packing the hose or the equipment this way, or the briefings, we conduct them this way. After talking to my assistant, if I was gone on a fire assignment, on a large fire assignment, I'd come back and everything was back to the way it had been before we changed direction. And I was getting angry. And I was blaming the captains. It was a difficult, it was difficult. I couldn't understand what was going on and why my guys were such knuckleheads. Well, I happened to go to a leadership program that the agency sponsored in another city. And for a week at a time, 3 weeks total over the course of a couple months, I'm being mentored and taught leadership issues by some of the agency's higher level executives. Well, or the retired executives. Now, some of them were good and some of them weren't great, but I was happy to be there. I was getting some insights into how to be a good leader. One evening, while I was going through all this trouble with my, oh, let me back up a little bit. Before I go on this one session, one of my young firefighters comes to me and says, oh, by the way, I really hate to say something, but you gotta know, and I'm gonna change the names just to keep the guilty unidentified here. Joe, not his real name, Joe said to the crew, he is going to set you up to get you fired. And I was like, what? Yeah. He says, I don't really like being in this position, but he said it in front of everybody, and it makes me really uncomfortable, and I shouldn't be having to tell you this. And I was like really upset. It's like, what do I do with this information now? And you know, the federal government is not an agency, you know, is generally not one that takes quick, decisive action when someone's not performing or doing something inappropriate. You know, there's got to be all sorts of documentation and all this. And I was new to the agency. I hadn't worked for the Forest Service, so it's the Forest Service. I hadn't worked for the Forest Service since the 70s, and now this is like 90, and I'm and or no, it was 2000 or thereabouts. And So I didn't know how it was going to go. And so I was kind of, this was heavy on my mind. And I go to this 1 week leadership program. And one of the people presenting at the leadership that week was a retired gentleman who was outstanding. I thought he had so much good to say. He had taken actions in his career that had national ramifications. He bucked the system back when it was not good to buck it, and he won. And he had my respect and a lot of people's respect. And so one evening I asked him, I said, "Hey, would you mind going to dinner with me? I've got some questions I need some help with." He says, "Oh, absolutely." And I explained to him the situation. I've got this dysfunctional district that, you know, things aren't getting done and my AFMO is pushing against me. And then he told people he was going to set me up to try to get me fired. And this gentleman, a little bit older, said, "What? Are you kidding me? What have you done?" I said, "I haven't done anything." He says, "You need to have him removed. He has got to be out of that job before fire season starts, because someone's going to get killed if he is pushing against your direction. You are the leader. He works for you. They work for you. They need to follow you. And it needs to be clear and unequivocal who's in charge on that district." I said, "Oh my God, they'll do that." He said, "You have to make it happen. You have to make it happen." So long story short, I spoke to the higher ups on my district, on my unit, my forest, and explained very clearly. They brought me in to make some changes on that district, and this is going to be required if they want to make the changes. So I kind of made it pretty clear, if they didn't remove this guy, I was gonna resign and take a job somewhere else. Well, very quickly they reassigned the individual, and he kept the job, but not doing the same kind of work. He didn't stay in that work, and things got better. I was able to select some people who were loyal and would speak up and tell me when I was going off the rails, and I appreciated that, and things got a lot better. But it took me probably a year and a half before we got to that point. I didn't know how bad it was. Now, the stories, these two stories have a lot in common. You know, that first story, the fire chief, he wasn't listening to anyone. He was just making these decisions and behaviors on his own. No one would have told him, just be pompous, be arrogant, and go in and just tell everybody how smart you are and you're going to clean this place up. Okay, that didn't go well for him. Now, on the other hand, when my membership wanted to take a vote of confidence on the chief, I should have called the state president immediately and called him and told him what had happened and what should I do? What do you think is going on? I acted like I was all alone. I was completely on my own and had no one to turn to. It was crazy. And that was one of the most stressful times of my life. When I got to call the fire chief, who I work for, and say, "Oh, hey, by the way, we're taking a vote to see whether the membership thinks you should stay on the job or not." That's a tough place to be. And I wasn't smart enough just to pick up the phone and call the state president. Now, at the next story there, I just happened to be at this leadership program. And I was just lucky enough to have access to a guy who was an incredible leader, great integrity, and so bold. Can you imagine if you work for the federal government and you're listening to this? Can you imagine someone saying, "You got to get rid of your assistant"? I mean, that doesn't happen much in the Forest Service for sure, or BLM. So that was huge. And if I hadn't reached out to him, I don't know what would have happened, and I don't know how things would have gone. It's scary to think about. So I think I would like just to stress to everybody, when you are in a leadership position, you should always be asking other people's opinions. It doesn't mean you have to do everything people tell you, but it's important to hear their perspectives. Because I heard on a interview, someone I respect said, if you bring in 10 experts, you're going to get 10 different opinions and they're all right. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think there's a lot of truth to that. And in this case, or in those two cases I just mentioned, the stories I just told, I think I could have gotten all sorts of input and it would have all been right. And I would have been able to pick and choose what I wanted to do. The first one, I didn't know enough to know what to do. And the second time I reached out, I was lucky enough to reach out to someone. So I just want to ask everybody, if you are in positions to make tough decisions and you're a leader leading a group or an organization, don't hesitate to look and ask for help. John and Riva, I'll ask if you guys have any input.
I'll just add something real quick. I think it's really common when you're in a new position, especially if you're promoted. And I'll be honest, if you're a woman in a male-dominated, profession, we're trying so hard to prove that we earn that job and that we belong there and that we can do it. And I think there's a lot of hesitancy often to admit that you don't know how to solve a problem, and you feel like it makes you look like, oh, they're not ready or they're weak, but it's really not that at all. We all have people who support us and hire us into those positions and share our vision. And so, like Bobby said, it's a little scary, but there are a lot of people out there wanting to help you be successful.
Thanks, Riva. John, anything?
Yeah, it's a great moral. Don't be afraid to ask for help.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Right, folks. I want to thank everybody for listening. Over 500,000 stories downloaded so far, so all of you are just amazing me by enjoying the stories. So, if this was a print copy, I'd say you're using it to start your fires or lining the floor of your bird cage, but there's no other use for this other than just to listen. So you must be enjoying them, and I appreciate that. So until next time, folks, thanks very much for listening.